Welcome to the North Valley's own Jerry O'Lennon. On KKXX Life Radio, this is Live Local Talk.
All right, good morning, everybody. I don't think I could be a counselor. I think I'd be probably good at it, but, you know, once in a while. But every day, having to hear people's problems. I go to work, I hear people's problems. I mean, you go, even when you're out, you know, almost anything in the world, people don't come up to you and they like to talk about problems. They like to tell people their problems. And it's such of a downer sometimes. I always say, never tell people your problems, because 90% of the people don't care about your problems, and the other 10% are glad you've got them. So don't tell people your problems. If you do have to tell somebody, tell a licensed therapist. You know, don't come talking to me about them, because I'm not a marriage and family therapist, and I can't help you. And really, it's so depressing sometimes, because when you think about going to see somebody for problems with addiction, problems with just being depressed, problems in your life, it's just so negative. But there is a different type now, and it's been going on for about the last 15 or 16 years, I suppose, of more, it's not called the power of positive thinking, but it's sort of like positive reinforcement or positive psychology. And we've been talking about that for the last 3 weeks with Gidi Hansen of The Growing Place. Gidi is a licensed marriage and family therapist with The Growing Place. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Yeah, I talk about this. I think it's always good to kind of recap what we've talked about in the previous few weeks. But so much of analysis, it seems to me, just whether it's true or not, I think the perception is that it's a very negative type of thing to go through, because you're going to a therapist because you have problems. You're doing something wrong. Something's wrong in your life, whether it's your fault or somebody else's or no one's fault. It just seems so negative and such of a downer.
Yeah, it can be. And actually, Dr. Martin Seligman, who is the director of the Penn Positive Psychology Center, had the same idea. Mm-hmm. And he is not against treating people with mental disorders. In fact, he's for it, and he's done a lot of good treatment and come up with good interventions. But in the year 2000, he started penning works that pointed to positive psychology. Mm-hmm. And what that means is, instead of looking at what's wrong with you, let's look at what's right with you, mm-hmm. and let's focus on that, and let's build that up.
And I think we need to remind people, though, there are some problems that are so paramount that you have to look at
absolutely.
You can't be positive about some things if you're a coke addict, for example.
Yeah. And really, this is not about positive thinking, mm-hmm. or positive confession, for those Christians who know what that is. It's really about changing your worldview. It's about changing the way you look at the world. And what Seligman did was, he said that he had spent most of his life working with extremely miserable people. And he discovered that extremely happy people differ from other people in a very significant way. And the way that they differ, he said that extremely happy people have the same problems, they have the same circumstances, they have the same issues as extremely miserable people. And I'm quoting him. This mm-hmm. is not my terminology. But he said the difference between the two is that the extremely happy people have a different viewpoint. They have a different outlook. They have a different approach to life. And so he does clinical work with positive psychology. And by that I mean happiness can be measured on a scale the same way that depression and anxiety can be.
Now, is it a case where two people could look at the exact same thing and see something entirely different?
Yeah, yes. Two yeah. people can look at the exact same thing and see something entirely different, uh-huh. on a continuous basis.
And that has to do with psychology, doesn't it?
And it has to do with helping the person shift their viewpoint. You know, whenever we get in a bad mood, I'll speak for myself. Whenever I get in a bad or grumbly mood, mm-hmm. I look around for things to complain about, or I look inside for things to complain about, until I realize this isn't about anything that's going on outside or inside. This is about what I am choosing to magnify.
You know, I'm a Lutheran. In our Lutheran catechism, there's a, you know, it talks about the seventh commandment, and it says that, don't speak ill of some, you know, a bad, you know, don't, what is it? It's
the seventh commandment, is thou shalt not commit adultery.
No, that's the sixth. The seventh is, let me get this right, about not bearing false witness against thy neighbor.
Oh yeah, I think that's number nine.
Maybe not. Yeah. I'm not sure. Whatever. But anyway, the point of the story was is that our Lutheran catechism said, put the best structure on everything. In other words, no matter what you see or what somebody says or what somebody does, try to imagine putting the best possible structure, doing, which means more than just giving somebody the benefit of the doubt. It kind of means saying, okay, somebody made a joke. It was kind of off color. It didn't work very well. But, you know, he meant to say something that was funny. And try to put the best structure on everything that is said and done. And I guess that's where I'm seeing what we're talking about here, where there's people that will sometimes hear something or see something and say, oh, that's terrible, that's terrible, that's terrible. And somebody else might say, well, the intention was, just look at the best possible structure of the situation, where you're being more positive as opposed to viewing the automatically thinking negative.
Yeah, that's an application of it for mm-hmm. sure. Mm-hmm. I think as we get into it more, it'll become clearer to the listener mm-hmm. what we mean by it. And then Seligman classifies the happy life in three categories.
And we're going to go to those three categories starting right after the break with the pleasant life. What that means, we'll talk about that more with Gidi Hansen of The Growing Place right after this break.
Feeling my way through the darkness, guided by a beating heart. I can't tell where the journey will end, but I know where to start. They tell me I'm too young to understand. They say I'm caught.
Welcome to KKXX Life Radio.
Life will pass me by if I don't open up my eyes.
This is Live Local Talk.
All summer, The Growing Place is presenting a Courageous Living series. It's every Saturday morning from 10 o'clock until 11:30. This week's topic, Saturday, 10 o'clock, is Escaping the Guilt Trap. To be a part of the seminar, Saturday at The Growing Place, 10 in the morning until 11:30, you can check out more by going to www.tgplace.com, tgplace.com, Escaping the Guilt Trap, part of the Courageous Living DVD series taking place all summer. One more time, this Saturday, 10 o'clock in the morning over at The Growing Place on East Avenue. Go to tgplace.com to learn more about that. Gidi Hansen, The Growing Place, talking about positive psychology. And we're beginning with the pleasant life. Dr. Seligman classifying happy lives in three categories, beginning with the pleasant life. Go ahead, Gidi.
Yes, the pleasant life is trying to experience as much happiness, as much positive emotions, as many pleasures as possible using savoring and mindfulness. And they actually teach you this at the Positive Psychology Center at Penn State. And you can find a lot of these interventions online. Savoring means you slow down and you enjoy it. So instead of gobbling down a whole candy bar, you break off a piece of it and you put it in your mouth and you slowly let it dissolve and you enjoy and you savor it. And then mindfulness means while you're eating the candy bar, you're not watching television or having a conversation. You're totally focused on the chocolate. There are whole diet regimes based on savoring and mindfulness.
You won't eat as much if you
if you enjoy what you're eating, and it'll slow you down so that after that 20 minutes when your body kicks in and says, okay, we're full now, you've eaten a whole lot less.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, this is a good thing. It's something that we can seek. But Seligman says if you put this in the top position, if you put pleasure seeking in the number one position in your life, it has three drawbacks. And I'd like to talk about those. What it is refined enjoyment. Okay, it's refining your enjoyment. But he says there's three drawbacks. One, it can't be easily modified, which means there's no growth or change factor. He says you can stretch it out 15 to 20%. In other words, that chocolate can only yield so much pleasure. There's not any way to grow from there.
Okay.
So you end up kind of going down a dead end, and you get stuck there. The other thing is it habituates rapidly, which means when we get used to something, even something very pleasant, the same pleasures can become duller and duller over time.
Interesting.
We get desensitized to the very thing that the very first time, ask any addict, they're searching for that very first time they took the cocaine or the heroin or whatever it was, and you can never find it again. And it just gets duller and duller and duller.
That's so interesting. I'm speaking to Gidi Hansen of The Growing Place. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist. If you want to find out more and speak to her, maybe set up an appointment for some issues that you have, give her a call at 588-0448, 588-0448. We'll talk more about that. But I don't want to get ahead. But I in my whole life, I've had people say, well, you know, I want to have a happy life. And I'm always like, I don't want to have a happy life. You know, I want a life that's meaningful, that has some substance to it. And because, you know, happiness comes and happiness goes. And I think that's what you're saying here, is that, you know, those of us who seek happiness is a temporary pleasure, isn't it?
It is exactly. Mm-hmm. It is exactly. And if you make happiness your top goal, you'll end up miserable. Just read the book of Ecclesiastes. Mm-hmm. There's a beautiful biblical example. King Solomon made pleasure seeking his top goal, and in the end he said it's all vanity, vanity, all is vanity.
Mm.
Because he said, I've tried every pleasure in the world, I've done everything that can be done, and it's all empty, it's all vain. So we see that pleasure, the pleasant life, has three drawbacks. We've talked about it can't be easily modified, there's no growth factor. It habituates rapidly, that is, it can become duller and duller over time. And the third thing is that it tends to be very fixed. It's not flexible or malleable. So if somebody's enjoying their chocolate and you try to talk to them, you may have a ferocious lion roaring at you.
Mm.
Because, you know, in Christian terms, it makes you very self-centered, very carnal, very seeking your own joy and your own pleasure to the exclusion of everything. And what's interesting to me is that this has clinically and scientifically been proven now. This is not faith or Bible verses. This is Seligman's research.
Mm-hmm.
He has shown, and we'll get to this in future shows, talk about jumping ahead, but he has shown that the pleasant life is the number one burnout of happiness seeking. That it has very little reward and very little duration.
Well, it's called the pleasant life, but it sounds like, does it really mean, because pleasant is fine, but what it sounds like what you're saying is happy life.
Or the pleasure life.
The pleasure life.
The pleasure. Well, think of it. If your life was always pleasant and you just lived for yourself, I mean, it's like going down a dead-end street. There's no outlet.
Yeah.
You know,
and from a Christian perspective, and we don't have to go down a Christian's perspective on this, but just for
no,
the heck
I'd
of
like
it,
to actually.
It seems to me that the pursuit of pleasure we're going to a break right now, but can lead to doing things that God finds displeasing. We're going to take a break and continue this. We're talking to Gidi Hansen of The Growing Place about positive psychology and the dangers of trying to live a pleasant, or maybe better put, a pleasurable life, and the drawbacks that come with it. And we'll continue and actually wrap up today's discussion right after this timeout.
Welcome to KKXX Life Radio. This is Live Local Talk.
All right, welcome back to the show. We're speaking with Dee Dee Hansen of The Growing Place. In case we should run out of time, I want to make sure that I give you her contact information. If you're looking for some help in any ways in your life, she's a marriage and family therapist, licensed with The Growing Place. You can go to tgplace.com for thegrowingplace.com. Or you can call her office at 588-0448. Speaking with Dee Dee Hansen again. And I think about, you know, the pleasurable life. I imagine this is the type of life, and I'm certainly, I think of the movie La Dolce Vita. I don't know if you ever saw it. It's a Fellini movie. What's that?
When it came out, I saw it years ago in Washington, D.C. when it came out.
When I first saw that movie, and this is actually Roger Ebert talking, but I found when I first saw that movie, I was a young man in college, and I thought to myself, that's the life I want to live. I want to be like that journalist running around Rome and going out with different women and running an exciting life and thinking, and then I saw it a second time when I was that person. And you know, so the first time I saw it, I was envious because I wanted to be him.
Mm.
The second time I saw that movie, I was like, Marcello Mastroianni plays the lead character
right,
in it.
Right.
And I thought, okay, now I'm living that life. I'm in Las Vegas and I'm living a wild lifestyle, fun life, all about myself, pleasure. And I related to it. And I said, that's okay. I saw it a third time about 5-6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt sorry for the guy.
Yeah.
I felt bad for the guy. I was like, oh no, you have destroyed your life and you've made all the wrong decisions and you were living for yourself and your own pleasure. And so that movie typifies, I think, the Dolce Vita. It's a wonderful movie.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful movie. It's almost 60 years old now, made in 1960 something, 61, I think, by Federico Fellini. But the pleasant life or the sweet life would
the
be another,
sweet life
another
is,
way of putting it, Dolce Vita.
Exactly.
And that's what we do. And of course, my intentions when I was a young man wanting to be a sportscaster was, okay, I'm going to do everything right. I'm going to be a good person, but I'm going to enjoy this. And it's so easy to go down the slope.
It is. And I want you to know that, you know, you and I were thinking down the same path because this easily leads to hedonism. And when I think of hedonism, I think of Hugh Hefner.
Yes.
Talk about, you know, God help him. I feel so sorry for him.
I think of, I think of Charlie Sheen.
Or him, yes.
He led a debauchery-filled lifestyle. And now he's paying the ultimate price.
Yeah, and may his heart turn.
Both of them.
Yeah,
you
may
have
their
to
hearts
too.
Turn. Well, I know.
Yeah.
So I don't want you to think that Seligman denigrates this pleasant life.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the weeks to come, we're going to find out it has its own place and value. So he's not saying it's wrong, but what he's saying is if it's in the top position, it's going to end up making you miserable.
Yeah. You know, I started to imagine, you know, Christ, when he walked the earth, and were there times, biblical times, when he just had pleasure? And we don't see that. And I've always wondered about that when I think about Jesus' journey with his disciples.
Well, he does make a reference to it. He says in the gospel account, he's talking to the Pharisees who have rejected both John the Baptist and him.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you know, John the Baptist came fasting and, you know, living in the desert. And you say, oh, he's demon-possessed. The man is crazy. And he says, the Son of Man, meaning himself, comes eating and drinking, and you say, oh, behold, a glutton and a drunkard.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that Jesus did not live the ascetic lifestyle of fasting and living in a cave the way that John did, and that you could have accused him of being a glutton and a drunkard. What I want to know is how did he stay so slim and beautiful?
Yeah,
but that's another story.
Because
he probably had small portions, unlike you and I. You know,
well, all that walking, you know,
and of course, he never committed any sin, including those sins.
Right.
So we know that, I mean, he liked to go to parties. Mm-hmm. He'd go to the parties with the wrong kind of people, according to the Holy Joes.
And heaven is, and when he talks about heaven, he talks about a feast all
yes.
the time. It's always a feast.
And a
it's
marriage.
A marriage and a feast and a good time. So
yeah.
I don't think that Jesus or that God wants us not to have those moments when we're actually having fun, because I think he himself has fun too.
Yes, absolutely. Joy yeah. is definitely one of the gifts of the Holy Spirit. And I'll give you and the listeners a preview of where we're going. After we finish looking at Dr. Seligman's three paths to happiness, we're going to look at individual strengths that produce happiness. But when we get to that point of our show, we're going to be looking at Seligman's research and the Bible, and we will make the happy discovery that now we have science to back up what the Bible has been saying for thousands of years.
It always
it's
works out
so
right.
exciting.
It is exciting because in all aspects of our life, we find out that that what we learn centuries later, well, 2,000 years later, everything was written exactly. I don't even want to get, in almost every issue.
Yeah.
God was right all along. If we just followed him, followed his ways, we would have it. We'd be, everything would be cool and
copacetic. That's what, Albert Einstein said that when you come to the final mountaintop of truth, you'll find that the scientific truth, you'll find the mystic sitting there mm-hmm. ahead of you. He got there ahead of you.
So when I see this, I see the pleasant life, I see the engaged life, I see
yes.
the meaningful life, and we have them in this order when you're looking at them from top to bottom. The basis, we're not going to get to it too soon, but it seems to me that the pleasant life is not the foundation that we should be looking
for. Not at all. And this, again, is coming from a clinical point of view. In other words, they have interviewed and they have done self-reports on thousands and thousands and thousands of people who report their happiness level. Mm-hmm. And when they report just seeking their own pleasure, their happiness is very low.
Look forward to our next discussion, Gidi. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Next Wednesday, we'll talk about the engaged life, and then the following Wednesday after that, the meaningful life. Again, if you want to give Gidi a call, 588-0448 at The Growing Place. Thanks for joining us, everybody. So long.